Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Rockets podcast, a very special episode of Locked On Rockets, as I'm joined by John Corrales of the Locked On Celtics podcast here in Houston, in person. This
in
is not
Houston.
A remote.
I'm here.
In the studio.
In H-Town. What's up? And this is, you know, a crossover episode, so I should say what's up to my Locked On Celtics folks, who are very confused right now, because usually I have this big pre-produced open. We got Millie's, a rapper who created this intro to the podcast, and it's not there. Why?
Do you want to borrow my Rockets intro?
No.
That'd be hilarious, because imagine if they turn it on, they're just like, what the hell? What? Why are we listening
they're
to Dream
already,
Shake on Robinson,
right.
And what's happening?
They're already very confused. So basically what happened is I forgot my podcasting laptop back in Boston, so I'm just going to post this entire file. There's no usual pre-production, and whatever, you know, I'm a moron, but we're going to continue rolling through, because that's basically my entire career.
Well,
rolling through the fact that I'm a moron.
Hey, well, we're going to fly by the seat of our pants here, and we're going to have a good time doing it. The Rockets are playing the Celtics Tuesday evening, and it's a late tip-off here in Houston, which is a little weird. It's 8 p.m., I think? 8:30 tip here
I'm
in Houston,
angry.
Which is really, you know, honestly, that's great for Houstonians, because they don't like to have their butts in seats at 7 p.m. when the tip-offs usually happen. So maybe come 8:30, there'll be, you know, a bit of a bigger audience,
this
which will be kind of nice.
Is this a TNT game or something?
It is. You know, it's one of those double headers, because they've got the 6 p.m. They've got the early tip-off somewhere else on the East Coast.
Can I tell you, this is a total beat writer thing. We're just like, oh my God, 8:30 tips is just the worst, because we just want to get our stuff done. We want to get our stories filed.
Oh, I'm sure this is going to be a late night for you.
This is going to be, I mean, I'm typically up till 3 a.m. anyway, so it's really, it doesn't matter. The game could be over at 3 in the afternoon, and for some reason, I'll still be up at 3 a.m. So
that you're just
I don't
a night
know why
out.
I complain. That's another beat writer thing. We just love to complain.
Hey, well, you know, one day when I make it into beat writer territory, it'll give me a chance to put all of my complaining to good use, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think we would be remiss if we just kind of sat here bitching back and forth. But
no, that's going to be 30 minutes of it.
Okay. All right. You know, this is a great podcast. You know what? This is just going to be a therapy session podcast. We're just going to complain and take turns doing it rather than talk about Rockets and Celtics. This is going to be what? Locked On complaining about life?
Locked On angry. I don't know. I have no... You caught me by surprise on that one. I've got no answer for that.
All right. Well, you know,
we're going to see basketball tomorrow night.
We are. And we're going to see two competitive teams.
They're good teams. They're good basketball teams. I'm curious to see what you think, because as I completely take charge here, I'm curious to see what you think of how the team looks now after the Capella trade, because I think that's really one of the biggest storylines in the NBA right now is, oh my God, Houston went small, starting PJ Tucker at center. And, you know, from me, for, you know, old Celtics guy, it's really not that big of a departure from what the Celtics used to do with Dave Cowan, 6'9 Dave Cowan, starting at center in the 70s and just go run and gun. So this isn't exactly unprecedented territory, but it's new for today's NBA. So what do you think of it? How's it looking?
You know, at least so far in the three games that we've had with Robert Covington as a Houston Rocket, I've enjoyed what I've seen. Now, obviously, they're just 1-2 since the trade became official. They did beat the Lakers, which was a huge win, but then they came out, had a really lackluster game against the Phoenix Suns, and then they lost on a really heart-wrenching buzzer-beater three to the Jazz Sunday evening. But overall, I'm enjoying what I'm seeing from the team, because Robert Covington really feels like that missing wing piece that they've sorely missed since the days when they had Ariza, Bamute, and PJ Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
And having that trio of wings, having that trio of really strong defenders to be able to throw out and have, you know, basically two of them on the court at all times has been sorely missed since the 17-18 season when they were one of the top defensive teams in the league.
Can I tell you something, though?
Sure.
If you had somebody taller, somebody might have blocked that Bogdanovich
shot. You know what? That's very... You know, calm down, Chris Webber, okay? I just... Ugh. Okay. You know, I don't want to hear it.
Sorry.
And you know,
that was right there. That was low-hanging fruit.
What? I teed it up for you, and you knocked it home. So, to throw some baseball references anyways. But... you know, honestly, and it's funny that we're able to have this chat now because the Celtics were one of the teams that were originally linked to Capella. In fact, I reached out to you, John, about, you know, getting some audio and kind of some of your thoughts on a potential Clint Capella trade and how that would look from the Celtics side of things. Now, the Celtics, to me, are kind of, aren't they one of their teams? They, with, you know, Daniel Tice and kind of, they have evolved into this almost sort of positionless style of basketball as well, right?
Sure,
the way
absolutely.
That they play.
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about the Rockets, but this isn't a ton different from what the Celtics have been doing a lot. It's just the Rockets are starting with a small guy. The Celtics have started Daniel Tice, and Daniel Tice can patrol on the perimeter. And one of his strengths, and you saw this in their most recent game, where he is able to just kind of ride some of the smaller guards a little further away from their comfort zone. So against Oklahoma City, especially down the stretch, you saw him do that against Dennis Schroeder and then use some of his length to challenge the shot. So he's a little bit of a more mobile big, and his size, his height definitely kind of plays into the Celtics' success. But then the Celtics, when Enes Kanter has been hurt, they rely on Grant Williams a lot, and he's like 6'7". And they've gone super, super small. In fact, now that they're seemingly fully healthy, one of the lineups that we're really trying to see how they work effectively, can they work effectively, is Kemba Walker, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward. And there's nobody above 6'8 in that group. So
I mean, Hayward's basically your center in that lineup, more or less, but it's still positionless.
But it's very positionless. It's switch across the board. Obviously Kemba is smaller, Smart's like 6'5", but you are really relying on, it's almost a sort of zone defense when you think about everybody switching, because by the time you get to a certain spot on the floor, you just go back to the other, you go back in the other direction after you switch. So it's not a zone per se, but when you switch as much as you do, it kind of gives the same effect as a zone, where you're not able to, when you're playing against a man-to-man as an offense, you're really, when you're setting picks, especially when you know you got James Harden, you're trying to get defenders out of position. But when you can switch onto that, there's just continuity across the perimeter, and you're just everywhere he goes, whether he slips the screen, where somebody rejects the screen, there's theoretically always somebody that's going to be right in front of him. So with all of that similar size and similar mobility, they play a sort of zone type of principle by being able to switch. And you sacrifice things in that manner. You really have to focus on your wings crashing the boards and rebounding. Jason Tatum has been a good rebounder, and a lot of these guys have been good rebounders. But when against the Rockets, it's going to be interesting to see, because you're going to have a lot of similar size guys and you're going to have a lot of people kind of doing the same thing. So I'm curious to see what the impact is. But against bigger teams, and that's what you're going to face against bigger teams, and you try to play this sort of defense, can you use your positioning to keep bigger people off the boards so you can swoop in and get rebounds and run the other way? Because the whole point of playing small is to be able to get the stops. You need to get the stops so you can run
the
other way.
Get out in transition, absolutely.
That's the big thing. And that's what I'm curious to see. And I think the Boston-Houston dynamic that we're going to see, like, I almost think like Houston can learn a few things from Boston, because Boston's been doing a lot of these principles for a while now.
You know, and I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, mainly because I think Boston has a slight edge over Houston in this regard, because I think so many more of the guys in the lineup are just more athletic than the Houston guys. Obviously, Russell Westbrook is a freak of nature when it comes to athleticism. Daniel House, not too bad. Robert Covington, you know, he had this, you know, knee surgery last April, and some of his, you know, lateral quickness and maybe a bit of his athleticism has gone away because of that. But he's still a phenomenal defender in his own right. But overall, the Rockets are just, they're an older, more unathletic type team. And so you really have to rebound by committee and, you know, do all the things that you were saying, you know, really get the wings in on crashing the boards to prevent easy baskets, I should say. And one of the things that Mike D'Antoni has been very vocal about with this new lineup is he doesn't care if the team gets out-rebounded. What he cares is if the team gets out-rebounded and if the opposing teams are, you know, scoring in the double digits as far as second chance points are concerned.
Right.
That's definitely a problem area that you have to prevent. And as far as kind of dealing with the bigs, which, you know, you talked about that too a moment ago, we saw it against the Lakers where the Lakers were almost forcing the ball inside too much and committing needless turnovers because they were so determined to get guys like Dwight Howard or Anthony Davis the ball up against a smaller player. And they were, you know, creating these careless passes due to fronting by the Rockets and other defensive measures put in place.
This is where you can flip the size disadvantage to your advantage. How are we on time? Should we take a break before I get into this?
We probably should. You want to walk us out?
Let's take a break here and come right back, and I'm going to talk about how being small actually could be an advantage against bigger players.
And we're back in here at our special Locked On crossover episode, Locked On Rockets and Locked On Celtics, and John was just getting ready to make a very interesting point.
So I was... I've made this point a little bit when it comes to the Celtics with size against the Philadelphia 76ers. If you want to try to post up a smaller player, and the Lakers can do it with Anthony Davis, but you know, I don't know. I don't have Anthony Davis's post-up efficiency in front of me, but I'm willing to bet he's not really a post-up player. He likes to face up. He likes to take jumpers. He can obviously score in the post, but he's not going to give you drop steps and up and unders, and he's not going to really work his way to the rim.
He's not going to bully ball his way through.
Exactly. He's not going to back you down. So when you've got, and especially when you've got a guy like B.J. Tucker, who's very strong.
Absolutely.
You can bait teams into trying to post you up, and... It's not going to happen, I don't think, against the Celtics because the Celtics don't have a big guy that's going to try to take advantage of it. But a lot of times when players have a mismatch, they see mouse in the house. We've got a big guy against a small guy. Let's get that into the post. Today's players aren't good enough in those situations to score efficiently enough to take advantage of that. And what ends up happening is... you try to post, and then everybody else just stands around. So even if he misses, they're not in position to crash. They're not in position to get an offensive rebound. And what ends up happening is, even if you have to hit a post up at somewhere around 55% just to be efficient enough to make that worth
more than
while.
A three-pointer, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So if you want to post us up, and grind your offense to a halt and have four guys stand around while one guy works. And really, in a post, especially against Tucker, you're banging against a brick wall. You're expending a ton of energy. You're trying to take a shot with the defender completely on top of you inherently because of the type of play that it is. You're putting yourself at a little bit of a disadvantage. And even though you've got the size, when you take the totality of the play into account and four guys standing around, you keep doing that, and what ends up happening is those other four guys just get lazier and lazier and more flat-footed, and if you can get those defensive rebounds, I agree with D'Antoni. You don't need total rebounds. You just need to clear the defensive boards. That's all. I don't care a damn about offensive rebounds, and I say that with Enes Kanter on our team and Mr. Offensive Rebound Master. Unless you've got an elite offensive rebounder, I'm like Doc Rivers. I'm willing to sacrifice the offensive rebounds, clear the defensive boards, and run. Because what ends up happening is, with those guys flat-footed, you get a half-step advantage. And that guy misses that jump hook or whatever, and by the time you're gone, those guys are a half-step behind, and you now have a two-on-one, a three-on-two, and now you're an advantage. You either get a layup, you draw a foul, you put a team in the penalty, you start taking free throws. With 6 minutes left in the clock, you can really put pressure on the other team if you can bait them into those plays.
That is an excellent point. Like, wow. All of that are things that I've considered, but I never was able to put it together as eloquently as that. So thank you, John. That's impressive. No, you know, and that makes a lot of sense, especially as far as the Rockets are concerned. You know, you talk about PJ Tucker, but not only PJ Tucker, James Harden, who is one of the most underrated. I don't know why bigs think it's a great idea to post up on James Harden. He's one of the best post defenders in the league.
Let me tell you, I crush James Harden defensively as often as I can, but post ups, he is a great post defender. He's super strong. Never post up James Harden. I think everybody should know by now you don't post up James Harden, just like you don't post up Marcus Smart.
There we go. It should be a league-wide memo at this point. Just don't do it. But players continue to do it. And as far as the Rockets switching scheme, you know, I feel like that's one area that teams think that they can suddenly take advantage of. They're like, oh, we got, you know, James Harden on a big. No, that's not an advantage for you. Like, I'm sorry. But I want to ask you specifically, as far as the switching scheme does go, you know, you were talking about it from the Celtics angle. I've kind of noticed, especially just even in previous seasons, but more so this season, as the Rockets defense has kind of dropped off a bit further this year than it has in the prior two seasons with Chris Paul. Is the switching defense, do you notice the Celtics being more susceptible to kind of these backdoor cuts and really some easy baskets at times? Because I feel like that is the biggest weakness of this switching scheme for the Rockets specifically. I see so many backdoor cuts that drive me insane, where it's just, and I don't know if it's just because their ball awareness is not where it should be, or if the principles aren't being ingrained by Coach Mike D'Antoni, who is, you know, historically been known as an offensive-minded coach and maybe doesn't preach defense as much as he should. But I want to know if the Celtics kind of experience a similar thing.
So backdoor cuts happen when there's a lack of communication or loss of focus. When somebody is not paying attention. My coaches always used to tell me, once you see the back of somebody's head, you cut. Doesn't matter what's happening in the offense. You see the back of somebody's head, boom, you cut to the basket. And it's up to everybody to be aware of what's going on to see, oh, what, there he is, boom, go. So when you allow a backdoor cut and you're playing in a switch everything type of scheme, you have to, switching relies on communication. And it's one thing to say switch everything, but
which is what the Rockets do.
Right.
They switch everything. They take it to the extreme.
Which I don't like. And I think one of my criticisms of the Rockets has been that they do take things to the extreme. They generally take things to the extreme. And as an aside, like the before Chris Paul, especially the we only want threes, we only want layups, and sacrificing the mid-range, I believe that some mid-range shots as a way to soften up a defense is necessary. And you saw with Chris Paul, like taking those mid-range shots draws defenders up. But anyway, that's an aside. Anything to the extreme is bad because there's always going to be something that you say, well, if we switch everything, we're going to have a problem. The Celtics against Oklahoma City started out switching everything, and in the first two or three possessions, they had Kemba Walker on Danilo Gallinari, and he got cooked because, I mean, Kemba's not a bad defender, but he's...
You're giving up almost a foot.
He's 6 feet tall, you know, not even 6 feet tall, and Gallo is a pretty skilled player.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Like that's you're just might as well just, you know, walk off. Just let him dunk it and just walk off. Don't even bother. So my point is that if you start switching everything, then you end up with mismatches, and you need everybody to be kind of on the same page there. To properly switch, you need to make sure that you've got good communication. And backdoor cuts happen when breakdowns in communications happen. And the Rockets have had some good defenders, but you don't have five great defenders on the floor. And the problem with defense is four guys can go out there and bust their ass and play perfect defense, and one guy can slip and the entire thing falls apart.
You're only as good as your weakest link.
It's exactly what it is. So, and it obviously sometimes it's James Harden. We've seen that. But it's not always James Harden. But if you're not fully communicating, and it's happened to the Celtics plenty of times throughout January, especially early in January, we saw that. When you see somebody score and all of the players are like looking at each other like, what just happened there? You know, somebody screwed something up, a rotation, one of whatever the defensive principle is, they screwed something up. If you're going to switch, then you have to have communication, which means not just saying, hey, switch. You got to make sure you're telling the person when to switch. You got to tell them to switch at the right time. And if there's a pick or something, you got to make sure that you're telling them where the pick is coming from, how the pick and roll defense is going to be run. At that point, there's even different kinds of switching, which I don't know how many people really pay attention to, but like there's a switch in the moment, There's a late switch. The Celtics have a thing they call veering, which is it's almost as if you're getting beat, but you're kind of guiding the guy towards the big, and the big sort of casually switches onto him, and it's just different types of switching. And that I think that's where, and in my conversations with Brad Stevens, that's where this league is going. It's not just as easy as saying switch everything. How are you switching? When you're switching? At what point in the play are you switching? So it's a long-winded answer to say that when it's not tight, when it's not communicated properly amongst all five guys, breakdowns happen. And in the NBA, it doesn't matter who you're facing. 450 players in the NBA, that 450th guy is one of the best players in the world, and he can take advantage of miscommunications on defense and make you pay.
And, you know, it's funny, you go into it talking about the communication aspect of it, which made it reminded me of a video that came out from this past summer with the USA basketball camp, or mm-hmm. USA basketball team, I should say. And PJ Tucker, unfortunately, wasn't able to actually play on the team because he rolled one of his ankles. But there's a video from one of their practice sessions, and he is the most vocal guy out there on the court, constantly calling things out, just bellowing to the point that I'm sure after a game he is hoarse beyond belief. And, you know, thinking about this Rockets team and just how they, like you said, they go to the extremes with everything, whether it's shooting threes, whether it's the switch everything defense, it does warrant a little bit of concern. And I think that they, especially now with the new, some people are calling it micro ball, which I really dislike. I don't want to call it micro ball. I don't like that. We're going to go with small ball. But with this new, you know, ultra small ball lineup, nobody taller than 6'7" playing on the court, I feel like they just have a much smaller margin for error than they do a traditional team, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I think we're right up against another break, aren't we?
We are.
All right. Well, then we will be right back in just one moment, so you guys don't go anywhere. And we are now back in here for our final segment at our Locked On podcast crossover with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics and
What's
myself,
up?
Jackson Gatlin of Locked On Rockets. Now, I usually plug my Twitter handle because not all of us are so lucky to have almost 30,000 followers on Twitter, John. You know, so me and my measly 1,400 followers, if you guys want to come follow me for Rockets news, I'm on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is on there at Locked On Rockets. I don't know. Do you even care about plugging yourself?
Of course I do. Come on, man. I got to get my name out there a little bit more. It's at @RedsArmy_John. And, you know, we'll retweet everything and, you know, make sure everybody knows. We gotta keep this Locked On fraternity thing going. You know, make sure people are going to you for anything Houston Rockets. Houston Rockets are a national story when it comes to what's happening in the NBA. Anything the Rockets do because of Harden, because of, a lot of different factors. Westbrook, you got two of the biggest names in the league. This is a premier team. This is what the Rockets do makes news, which is, I find it interesting. What the Rockets are doing, because they traded away Capella, because they don't have a really big option, that's what
Well, they
makes
have
it
Isaiah
different.
Hartenstein, but Mike D'Antoni refuses to play him. That's a whole dilemma. That's a whole thing. My Rockets listeners, they'll hear this and they'll be like, "Damn it, he's right." Like that's been a whole ordeal this entire season. But I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, that's fine. But before we get into a little bit of what this game, maybe what we can expect from this game, did you think that they were going to do something after you trade Capella? Get that you trade Capella, and my understanding, my read of the situation was, all right, Capella is the most tradable guy. He was on a tradable deal.
Best trade chip, yes.
You know, so you use that to, and going to Atlanta was the perfect destination. I think Capella's going to be great in Atlanta. It's a great fit.
Oh, him and Trae Young, they're going to have the deadliest pick and rolls in the league, a la James Harden and Clint Capella.
Right. So that works for them, and you move Collins over to the four, and I think that works out great for Atlanta. And you bring back Covington, but I thought there was like, all right, you bring back Covington, and then you what? I wanted them to go out and get Aaron Baines. I don't know if Aaron Baines, he wasn't traded, but something like that, somebody like that, an Aaron Baines type that can bang a little bit, somebody that can space the floor a little bit. Not that if I say that like there's a million of those guys out there, but I thought there was another move for Houston.
I think there definitely was supposed to be another move. In fact, there was a really strong report that came out that the Rockets had originally tried to pry away DeAndre Jordan from the Brooklyn Nets and bring him in, because the way that the trade deal was structured is they were supposed to bring in, I want to say off the top of my head, it was around another $12 million in salary to bring back into the deal with all the contracts that they sent out. And unfortunately, they weren't able to do that. It sounded, and to me, and here's the thing, is a lot of Rockets fans and a lot of Rockets listeners believe that Daryl Morey can do no wrong. He is, you know, a lot of times it's Tillman Fertitta this or Mike D'Antoni that, and those are the two main punching bags for Rockets fans and Rockets and these listeners. But it sounds like, and again, we don't know what happens in these closed door meetings. We don't know the full truth of what goes on behind the scenes.
Right.
But I think that Daryl Morey just didn't play his cards right. I think that he felt like he had enough time to orchestrate another acquisition, to bring it, to use that additional, what was it, $12 million in salary to potentially bring somebody like DeAndre Jordan into the fold, or maybe an Aaron Baines type, something to that effect. And then the Brooklyn Nets were like, no, we're good. We don't want to do that. And then he was scrambling to try and maybe find another trade partner, bring in another trade chip. And it sounds like the other teams involved in the four-team deal, Denver, Atlanta, and Minnesota, were pressuring him to go ahead and finalize the deal faster than, you know, what would have been up until the trade deadline buzzer.
Yeah. I don't know why he would think that DeAndre Jordan was available from Brooklyn. I mean, the whole point of DeAndre Jordan even being in Brooklyn was to make Kyrie and KD happy.
Yeah, friendship rainbow.
They didn't want DeAndre Jordan. Do you think the Brooklyn Nets care about signing DeAndre Jordan? They don't want him, but they have to keep him.
And maybe that was some of the rationale, is maybe, hey, you know, you, and maybe they offered up Isaiah Hartenstein. Again, we don't know exactly everything that happens in these closed door meetings and, you know, behind the scenes. But at the end of it all, I think that it was just a miscalculation by Daryl Morey, and that he was then, you know, banking on maybe a buyout candidate wanting to come to Houston. And that just hasn't, it honestly hasn't played well in recent years. The Rockets strike out in the buyout market, it seems like, every year.
Do the Rockets have anything more than the minimum? I don't think they do, right?
No, they've just got, if they want to avoid the luxury tax. So.
I mean, what's with the luxury tax? Like, pay the damn tax.
You just made a lot of listeners really happy. I'm just going to throw that out there.
You're the Houston Rockets. You've got Harden. You've already, like, I don't know. I feel like, and this is just an outsider's perspective, you've got competing forces going on over here. Like, you've got this opportunity to win now. Like, this is your chance. You got time to not pay the tax 3 years from now. You paid the repeater tax, what, is it 3 out of 4 years?
Yeah.
So you've got 3 years to decide whether this works. So pay the damn tax now and just deal with it. Because, I'm going to stop myself there. Daryl Morey did kind of screw himself by saying what he said about China. And I'm not going to get into the political ramifications of it all, but the Houston Rockets did just lose a ton of money from the Chinese market because of all of that.
And the NBA, the NBA as a whole.
Like, the NBA salary cap is not rising as much as they thought it would because of this whole China fallout. And again, whether you believe in Morey, what he said and all that, it's inconsequential at this moment because we're talking about finances. And that the finances have changed. So maybe Tillman is saying, well, you know what? You screwed yourself by saying what you said. So guess what? No luxury tax for you. Deal with it.
It's very possible, and this is something that, you know, especially when it went on, you know, it was really funny. I inherited this podcast right when all that happened, so I came on here and I was locked on China for a few episodes instead of locked on Rockets.
Congratulations to you.
Yeah, it was like, you know, congrats, you finally have a podcast to talk about the Rockets, you have a platform, and now this China thing happened. So I talked about that for about a week when it first happened because we just kept having more and more breaking news, but I think there's a history even before that occurred of Tillman Fertitta not being willing to pay the tax and making moves specifically to duck the luxury tax, which is why fans have been upset. I will end this with a bit of a silver lining, is that if the Rockets do dodge the luxury tax, they will have the non-taxpayer MLE to play around with this upcoming summer, which may become a really big piece to use if they, you know, if it if it doesn't work out,
that's
with
like $9 million or so, right?
Yeah, it's gone up quite a bit. It might even be 10.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but it's a fair amount of money.
It's substantial.
It's not nothing.
And so with the rest of their immediate core, all their starters locked down, Covington, Gordon, Harden, Russ for years, you know, it might be a huge boon to this team to be able to use that amount of money to really bring in your final player, maybe another traditional five, or maybe they deal Eric Gordon in the summer to shore up their rotation. A lot of different options. So I don't think it's the end of the world that they didn't do it at this trade deadline, but I do think it was a miscalculation on Morey, because it sounds like Tillman Fertitta gave him the green light to add the salary, and he just couldn't get it done.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what really happened, but if he was banking on DeAndre Jordan, that was a severe miscalculation, because any of us could tell you that DeAndre Jordan was not leaving Brooklyn. How I dealt with Kyrie for 2 years in Boston. Brooklyn knows better than to piss him off 1 year into his 4-year contract. It just... to think that DeAndre Jordan was available is kind of silly, and I can't believe that he would actually do that. What do you think about this game? We have a game that's coming up, the Celtics Rockets. I like the Celtics' chances. I'm kind of curious what you think, but I think the Celtics, because they're healthy, Jason Tatum, Player of the Week, he's on a roll. He's got like 30 points a game over his past four. Jaylen Brown is playing a little bit hurt, but I like the way these guys are playing, and I'm really curious to see how they're going to deal with I wonder if Daniel Tice can make a difference, because he's mobile and he's got size, and he's willing to do some of the things that, like, he can shoot over the top of some of these, like he can shoot over the top of PJ Tucker. And if he's a threat and you have to like pull Tucker away from the rim a little bit, if you have to kind of open things up, the way Hayward's been playing recently, the way Tatum's been playing recently, I think you can really open things up for the Celtics to get to the rim. And if the Celtics are attacking, the most dangerous Celtics team is the one that attacks and gets to the rim. If the Celtics are scoring in the paint, I don't think you have a chance, to be honest with you.
You know, and I'm really interested to see how they're going to stop Russell Westbrook, because Westbrook, ever since, so it's been about a month and a half ongoing now, that he essentially eliminated three-pointers from his game, and he has completely refocused his energies on driving to the rim, getting right to the cup. His efficiency has skyrocketed. Again, I don't have the number. Neither one of us have laptops. We're really slacking on this one. But I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it's something like over the last month and a half, his efficiency has jumped up
it's
by about...
It's called podcasting by feel.
There we go. Yeah, we're feeling it out. No, but his efficiency has skyrocketed. He's, you know, averaging over 30 over the last month or so. And really, I wonder who's going to check him first off. It's not going to be Kemba. I would imagine it's probably Jaylen Brown.
Well, I would say, what's your starting lineup?
It's going to be Russ, Harden. There is no Eric Gordon. So it'll be Russ, Harden, Daniel House, PJ Tucker, and Robert Covington would be the starting five.
Right.
Gordon will be out this game. He's not going to return until post-All-Star break, unfortunately.
So, I mean, I would say in that lineup, I would probably put Jaylen on Harden. And I would say you throw Tatum on... Westbrook. And see if the size, because Tatum's defensively, he's been great. See if his size can bother, because he can slide, and I don't know how many people are going to stay in front of Westbrook. There's going to be a fair amount of switching too. Like, we talk about these individual matchups, like it's going to be like a one-on-one matchup the whole time. There's going to be a fair amount of switching. I think the Celtics are going to switch. This is where you switch everything and you deal with it, and you just say, you know, if Daniel Tice ends up on Harden, just be like, just don't let him...
Do your best.
Yeah, just don't foul him. Stay with your hands back, and, you know, don't let him shoot the three. Just have him drive, and we'll deal with it. You know, have him drive, and then we'll rotate off, you know?
Did you watch the Rockets-Jazz game by chance, or no?
I didn't.
So do you know who the primary defender for Westbrook in that game was?
I heard it was Gobert.
It was Gobert, which was so insane to think about. And I like to think, one, you know, kudos to Russ for not falling into the trap of, okay, Gobert's guarding me. He's sagging off by about 12 to 15 feet. I'm just going to start settling for threes. He didn't do that. He shot 2 3-pointers in that game. He hit the first one he took. He missed one later on in the game, but only 2 threes. He's sticking to what he wants to do, which is, at times, he was driving to the lane and bodying the hell out of Rudy Gobert, which was really impressive, mm-hmm. which is why I was wondering, and we, you know, we say there's going to be a lot of switching, but in some of the half-court schemes, the Rockets have been setting less screens now because they know... Since dealing Capella, they've been setting less screens because of Westbrook and Harden's abilities to beat anybody off the dribble in this league. Yeah. They don't need a screen set to beat their man. So I wonder, again, who's going to be the primary guy guarding those two to see who has the best chance, I guess, of stopping them. Because I think Westbrook's going to get his. Harden has struggled on and off for the last month. It's been really frustrating seeing kind of, because he'll have one game where he shoots great from three, and then he, you know, was struggling to get to the rim and was getting blocked, just it seemed like every other drive. And mm-hmm. then in this past game against the Jazz, he was 9 of 10 inside the arc, but he shot just 2 of 13 from behind it. So it seems like James hasn't been wild. His complete self for about a month now.
So I think that what you're going to see with Westbrook, the Celtics are absolutely going to do everything in their power to make him a jump shooter. And that's going to mean that when he beats a guy off of the dribble, that somebody else is there to meet him. It's going to almost be like the Giannis Antetokounmpo defense when they're playing the Bucks, where it's hands out, stay low, kind of big across the perimeter, and try to first deter the drive, and then detour him away from the rim if he does get past you. It's just as simple as, if you're guarding Westbrook and you get beat, try to keep him somewhere. Just stay on his hip enough so he's not by you, so you can kind of guide him a little bit towards somebody. And then you veer, and then you veer off and pick up. So if he's, let's say Tice is the guy back there, you now, as your sort of beat, you kind of push him this way, and you kind of separate, almost like a rocket, like in stages. You separate, and then you go a different direction.
I appreciate the rocket reference.
Thank you very much. You go and recover to help the other guy, so you're not getting the backdoor alley-oop. So I think it's just going to be a matter of the Celtics' discipline and showing hands and trying to, as often as they can, have somebody stepping up into Westbrook's path. And it really is not going to be easy. It does take a ton of communication to do that and focus, but it's going to take, I think that's going to be their approach, is going to be somehow to
going to take a team effort to really slow him down.
It truly is. It really is. I mean, you can't guard him as much as, like, I'm not the biggest Westbrook guy, but he's so athletic. He's so fast off the dribble. And if he's being selective with his shots, then that's what makes him all-star Westbrook. If he's gunning from three, that's what makes him the worst Westbrook possible.
We call them Bestbrook and Worstbrook around these parts.
I love it.
We've been getting Bestbrook for about a month and a half. It's been great. We had Worstbrook for a chunk of the season, but he did come in with some, you know, injuries to his hand, and he had the offseason knee scope, so he wasn't healthy earlier in the season. And he was being encouraged by the Rockets coaching staff to shoot more threes, which wound up being a horrible decision.
So here's the one wild card that I can throw at you. Marcus Smart loves playing against the Rockets.
Oh, I'm getting flashbacks.
Marcus Smart loves playing against not just James Harden, but Marcus Smart loves playing against Russell Westbrook. Like, he and Westbrook have had battles in Oklahoma City. Battles. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Marcus Smart is in there, not on Harden, when Marcus Smart comes in and maybe subs in early. I don't know what the substitution patterns are for D'Antoni. But if he comes in at like the 6-minute mark, he's going to check Westbrook, I would say, and really go to town and try to frustrate him, because Westbrook's number one enemy is his own mind. And if you can get in his head and turn this into a mano a mano, like, oh, I remember you, Marcus, and you get that kind of thing where he starts forgetting his teammates and kind of forgetting himself.
Just get him angry. Yeah.
And you just get, once you get under his skin and he's prone to it, then that could be the thing. Because honestly, it's not, you can actually survive Harden going off. You can't survive Harden and Westbrook going off.
No, it's really tough if they're both having a really solid game. I've said it before, you know, and it might sound almost dumb to boil it down to the win conditions being something this simple, but it really is. For the Rockets to win a game, they really only need two of three things to happen, and that's either Westbrook have a good game, Harden have a good game, or the role players, and when I say the role players, I just mean two or three of them, have decent games. And for the most part, they're basically in any game where two of those three things are happening. And then the blowouts, the really successful games they've had this season, are when all three of those things occur.
Right. I'm sitting here like knocking my mic around. So I'm sorry if there's background noise there. So that would be my.
I do have one more follow up. I want to hit on that last thing that you mentioned. And that is, earlier this season, I thought the exact same thing about Patrick Beverley and Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah.
And Beverley wound up. So in all three games so far that the Clippers have played against the Rockets, which the Rockets are 2-1 against the Clippers, Beverley has actually checked Harden most of the game.
Huh.
And so I found that really interesting because I expected the exact same thing that you said about getting inside of Westbrook's head, kind of, you know, getting him angry, really getting under his skin. I would imagine that Patrick Beverley could have done that better than anybody else against Russell Westbrook. But no, they opted to use him as the primary defender on James Harden.
Mm.
And so I wonder if it's going to be the same thing, because I immediately, when I think James Harden and Marcus Smart, I think back to that one game, I think it was the 17-18 season, where Harden committed two offensive fouls in the final, 10 seconds?
Oh, we know
seconds?
That game,
like,
very well.
Oh, man, that's the one that I jump back to every time. And so I really think that Marcus Smart might be better served on James Harden than I do on Russell Westbrook.
I guess the only thing I can say is, in those earlier games, Westbrook was kind of like still gunning from three a lot. So you probably...
They lost a game off of a Westbrook attempted three-pointer. So
right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they thought that Westbrook was kind of like taking himself out of the game, so we didn't need Beverly's. The whole point of
I
Beverly
can see that, yeah.
and Smart is that they were instigators. And if you need somebody to, like, if you're saying, I need to take this guy mentally out of the game, and you've got Beverly or Smart on the team, like, that's who you put on him. So that would be my approach. I mean, I think James Harden, those two offensive fouls aside, I think James Harden has been around too long to kind of get caught up in that stuff. And it might actually have a counterintuitive effect where you fire him up, and that's going to get him going. I'd rather have Harden just kind of feel like blah, and maybe, and that would be another part of why you put Smart on Westbrook. If you can lock Westbrook and Smart into a mano a mano, and Harden is just kind of like standing there like, hello, hey, remember me? I'm like the best offensive player in the generation. If you're taking, you can almost take two guys out mentally by locking Westbrook into a one-on-one battle, because, like I said before, you get him so focused on himself and he forgets his teammates. Like, he has forgotten that he had Kevin Durant on his team.
It's like a matador with a bull.
Right.
Like,
so if you can get him to kind of black out, for lack of a better term, and forget for three or four possessions that he's got Harden right next to him, then that you're effectively guarding two guys with one player, if you can do it. But you have to get under Westbrook's skin to do that.
That's a really good point. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm excited for this game.
It's gonna be fun.
This is one of the games that I've been the most excited about.
Sucks
for
that
this
it's
season.
At 8:30, but it's gonna be fun.
It is going to be a fun game. Now, how do you usually wrap your podcasts up?
I beg people to give me 5-star ratings and
okay.
good written reviews.
I usually do that at the top of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do it really quickly.
I tell people,
but
please share the podcast.
Hey, that's a good one, too. You
share
know,
it. Tell your friends.
Have I not said that? I don't think I've ever asked any of you guys to share the Rockets podcast. I just kind
Absolutely.
Of...
Absolutely.
That's a good one.
If you're a Celtics fan or a Rockets fan, somebody inevitably is going to say, I need a Celtics podcast. I need a Rockets podcast. And they should be saying, hey, you know what? I got locked on Rockets right here. I got locked on Celtics right here. That's what people should be doing. We're free. We're Monday through Friday. We're free. We don't ask people for money. I mean, I hope people will, you know, buy some of the things that we're selling on the podcast, but we don't ask people for money.
You can also advertise with the podcast. That's something we've been talking about.
I mean,
a little
if you've
bit.
Got a business, you can absolutely advertise with the podcast. Then in that case, we are directly asking you for money for sure. But our form of payment is 5-star ratings, good written reviews, to get us rising up in the rankings in iTunes and sharing the podcast so more people listen to us. Because the more people that listen, it means the more that more money that we get from the advertisers. It's as simple as that.
That's so a good point.
You
I can't
pay
believe
us
that. By sharing.
By sharing.
I can't believe I haven't done that. Wow, I am failing not only myself, but all my listeners too.
I hate to tell you that you're a failure, so I'm not going to.
I appreciate that. You know what? I appreciate. You know, I've shown you a little bit of Southern hospitality.
I don't know you well enough
so,
to be making that kind of joke.
Hey, I feel like we're already buddy-buddy. We've known each other for what, an hour?
It's like
an hour
that.
And a half? I mean.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, this is where we'll wrap things up for. We're well over. I feel like Doug's going to yell at us.
Nah, you know. When it's this good, you can't help but keep going.
Right? It's a good one. This is a great episode. And so I hope that everybody listening, both Celtics fans and Rockets fans alike, have had a great time enjoying this podcast. Again, that's John Corrales. I'm Jackson Gatlin. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And John, what is your Twitter?
Reds Army_John.
There we go. And I think that's where we'll wrap things up for. So thank you all for listening. And we hope to have you back at our Locked On Podcast Network very, very soon.